Good morning, counsel. You will each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments. The appellant will have 5 minutes.
Reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Well, you can have five if you want it, or if you want to reserve three, that's fine, too.
Then I'll take the whole five.
Okay, you get the five. You do get five. So, and I would ask that you both introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral argument.
Your Honor, my name is Jack Keschler. I'm the attorney for the plaintiffs.
All right, very good. If you want to proceed then with your oral argument this morning.
May it please the court, before we get into the details of this case, I think there are several important big points to make and to keep in mind as we go through this. This is an important civil rights case. The city has unlawfully taken almost $120,000 from a church and a group of small-town residents on a theory that they have a special assessment, even though a special assessment must be supported by a finding of special benefit. That is to say that the work involved has created an increase in the value of the plaintiff's properties. That has absolutely not happened, and in this case is the basis of our claim constitutionally that this results in an unconstitutional taking under both state constitution as well as the federal constitution.
But isn't this an appeal from a special assessment?
Yes, it is.
And isn't the issue whether the court had personal jurisdiction over the defendant?
Yes, it is, and the court does have personal jurisdiction over the defendant in two ways. It's important to recognize that the original appeal was filed, well, first of all, the state statute 429 requires three elements of notice to the city. Number one, the plaintiffs have to provide a written notice even before their cause of action has arisen. They have to provide a written objection to the city before the city takes any action. Number two, within 30 days of the city's action, they have to file serve their appeal on the city. And then within 10 days of that, they have to file it with the district court. In this case, the plaintiffs filed their written objections right away. We served, but by e-service, the summons and appeal on the city 10 days before the time had run, along with a letter saying that it was my understanding that the city was accepting e-service in this regard. And if that was not
the
case,
did the city ever respond?
Would they please respond? They never responded. They laid in the weeds and waited for the 10 days to pass and then moved to dismiss.
Well, when you say e-service, you mean email, correct?
I mean email in this case. And although I did on the very same day then e-file with the district court the complaint, again, 10 days before the period had run. The important thing is that in addition to those services...
But is service by email sufficient to meet the requirements of 429.081?
We feel that it is under these circumstances, Your Honor. But the key is that in addition to that service, there was personal service the next month upon the city.
But that's a different issue there.
It is and it isn't. Because the key on this is that we have two claims, and we pleaded very carefully, a claim not alleging 429 violation.
Right, but let's hold that for further discussion, because there are two different issues here. The first issue is whether or not the district court had personal jurisdiction based on service.
That is correct. And the city argues that we did not because we did not do the liturgy of personal service, even though they admit that they had actual knowledge of an actual notice of the claim.
Actual notice is not recognized here in Minnesota. Though.
Well, I will agree that there is plenty of case law that says the Vernco case, it goes contrary to that, but there's plenty of case law that says that if you don't do personal service, you're out of luck. And so I will admit, for the sake of discussion here today, even though we feel that we have strong arguments, equitable arguments, as to why actual notice ought to be enough and that the liturgy of personal service ought not to be required in all instances such as this, I will admit now, for the sake of discussion, however, that let's put that aside. Let us assume that you decide simply that under 429, Heschler loses. However, It has been standard law in Minnesota for more than 100 years that an assessment that is not supported by special benefit is a violation of both the federal and the state constitution.
Right, but that's a separate issue of the first issue I think we need to clarify as to whether or not there is sufficient personal service under the statute.
And I'm suggesting to you that you can decide that against me.
Okay.
I don't agree with it, but I'm suggesting that you can do that.
Okay.
But you still must deal with my federal claim. And my federal claim has, this court has jurisdiction, the Minnesota courts have jurisdiction over the city by virtue of personal service on January 30th of the very same complaint. And in that case, we may have lost our state claim for failure to comply with the strict requirements of 429.
By state claim, you mean your appeal pursuant to 429.081?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
But the point is, there are parallel and companion claims there. It's a violation of both the state statute and state constitution, and it's also a violation of the federal constitution, the Fifth and the 14th Amendments, that you cannot have a taking of property without just compensation. And in this case, the just compensation has to be the providing special benefit. But the case law is clear and has been, as I said, it starts with a United States Supreme Court case, Norwood versus Baker in 1898. In Minnesota, it's Superior Street in Duluth in 1927, Quality Homes versus the City of New Brighton in 71, Carlson Lang versus City of Windham in 76, and then Buettner versus the City of St. Cloud in 79. All of these cases stand for the proposition that a special assessment that is not supported by special benefit amounts to a taking under the federal constitution.
Well, can I ask you this? Because you served the exact same document, right, on
exactly,
January the 30th,
exactly.
Which you say, and you've already indicated, and it appears from the caption on it, it's an appeal from a special assessment.
Yes, it is.
And is there anything indicating, I mean, if it's an appeal from a special assessment and the court admittedly didn't get personal jurisdiction over the defendants, how can you revive that claim by simply serving everyone after the time period has?
Under Felder. Felder versus Casey is the United States Supreme Court case that says very clearly that state notice of claim rules, such as these under 429.
But this is not a notice of claim. This is an appeal, which is different from a notice of claim.
Well, these rules, though, right? Are notice of claim rules. That is to say, it's the same thing that they had in Felder. Felder had 120 days to give the city notice of his claim. The city had 120 days to decide whether it would, how it would respond. And the plaintiff was unsatisfied, he had 6 months to bring his case. Those were jurisdictional prerequisites to being able to bring a case.
But isn't Felder distinguishable? Because in that case, they actually brought a 1983 action under federal statutes.
But 1983 is merely a remedy. It is not a cause of action. The cause of action is in the Constitution. In that case, it was the Fourth and the 14th Amendment.
Well, but they're alleging constitutional claims.
Yes, and I am. And I'm saying Fifth and 14th Amendment. And
which is totally different here. Whatever rights of appeal that exist are under state statute, correct?
No.
Where in your notice of appeal and appeal did you sufficiently plead the constitutional claims?
In the in paragraph 4 of the appeal, it says, to the extent that these assessments exceed any special benefits, that is to say, increase in market value, the change constitutes an unconstitutional taking without due process. And you'll note that there is no reference to 429 anywhere in that appeal. We were very careful to state that this is grounded in the Constitution And now it's grounded on both sides, the state constitution as well as the federal constitution, but it is grounded in the constitution, and that's the basic gravamen of our complaint. But here, you can properly say, I disagree with it, but you could properly say you did not properly serve your state 429 cause of action on the city by personal service. You only gave them actual notice. You didn't give them personal service. That's true. But I have a separate freestanding federal violation, which under Felder cannot be inhibited by claims that procedural claims that are not, that do not exist in the federal constitutional scheme. And in this case, under Felder, let me make a different point. I would agree that if all I had done was rely on my original notice by email, I might have a tougher case. But in this case, I reserved it again on the 30th of January. And under Felder, that service is sufficient to give the city notice of our constitutional claim. And even after the state claim is taken away from me, I still have my federal claim. And we, in this court, still has jurisdiction because it has concurrent jurisdiction along with the federal courts to resolve these federal claims. Felder said some interesting things that I think the court are. Let me tell you about Felder a little bit, and that is to say, he, notwithstanding this Wisconsin set of rules about how you bring a case against the city, he only brought his claim in state court 9 months after the event it occurred. The state Supreme Court said that we have rules to valid rules to administer matters before us, and Felder did not comply with those valid rules, and thus he's out of luck. The U.S. Supreme Court said not so fast, and in fact said not at all, because there are no similar procedural rules on the federal regime.
But Felder was not a personal jurisdiction case, correct?
It only involved
a notice of claim.
And Felder
prior
served
to filing of the lawsuit.
No. He did not.
State notices of claims.
I'm sorry. Say it again, Your Honor.
In other words, Felder basically said you can bring a 1983 action, and you can't kick that action out of federal court by virtue of the failure of the plaintiff to give a notice of claim under state law.
That's one aspect of it. However, this was a state court action. This is not a federal court action.
All right, but it was a 1983 action.
But the answer is 1983 is something that we're going to ask for by way of an amendment, but 1983 doesn't give rise, it's a remedy. 1983 gives damages and attorney's fees, but it doesn't give a cause of action. The cause of action is in the Constitution.
But there's nothing in your pleading here that says anything about a 1983 action.
There is not, and that's why I intend to amend to ask for that. But at this point,
Counsel, if we were to affirm the district court, could your clients file a new lawsuit alleging their constitutional claims, federal and state constitutional claims?
State?
Federal and federal. State constitutional
no,
claims?
Only federal. I'm out of luck. If you rule against me on state grounds and 429 grounds, I can, of course, appeal to the Supreme Court. But if I didn't do that, I could bring a new, and if you dismiss this and ignored the January 30th service, I could bring a new state court action up to December of next year. Generally, the Felder talks about the fact that statute of limitations is the PI statute of limitations.
If this is true that you can just bring a federal claim every time you have a special assessment, a separate federal claim, why even go through the state?
Because the
procedure.
Federal courts don't want to talk about special assessments.
But aren't you basically gutting any The state statute, which...
No,
which
no.
applies
All
here?
All we're doing is saying that the city needs to obey the law. The city needs to follow the dictates of the statute, that they have to make some determination. Doesn't have to be exhaustive, but they have to make some determination that there was special benefit involved in this case. And the League of Minnesota Cities recommends that city do preliminary appraisals in these cases it's as a best practice. In this case, the city of Pine Island did nothing. It simply assumed that cost equals special benefit. Good night, ladies, and here we go. And so the result is that what will be necessary if I win my case is for cities to do what the League of Minnesota Cities say they should do, and that is to say, because they control the whole procedure, they merely need to be more careful and determine that there is a special benefit in light of this public project that we've got going on. It's not just that we need the money, and so we need to get it.
All right, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court. My name is Elizabeth Brodeen Quo, and I represent the City of Pine Island. Good morning, Your Honors. Is the act of sending an email sufficient to commence a lawsuit in Minnesota? The answer is no. Therefore, the district court's decision should be affirmed. Minnesota Statutes Chapter 429 provides a comprehensive framework for not only how special assessments are adopted by city councils, but also how property owners who wish to contest those special assessments should appeal the adoption by the city council of a special assessment.
Well, I think council devoted most of his time here this morning to his separate claim, which is his federal constitutional claims.
Yes, Your Honor.
We should address those.
Yes, Your Honor. There were no constitutional claims raised below. As Your Honors have noted, the pleadings that were submitted to the court below and also emailed to the city within the time frame but not served until January 30th, which was the day of our motion to dismiss hearing, do not include any standalone constitutional claims.
Why do they have to be standalone?
In order to properly give notice to the city that is a claim that's being brought.
Why isn't it enough to cite to the fact that there's been an unconstitutional taking without due process? And isn't that referenced several times in the pleadings?
The way that a special assessment appeal works is typically that if a special assessment does not exceeds the special benefit that a property receives, then it converts to an unconstitutional taking. So they're tied together, but it starts with the analysis under 429, whether or not a special assessment matches the special benefit that a property owner receives. And in their complaint, I'd like to read paragraph 4, or their pleadings, I should say. Paragraph 4, which is in the appendix on A12, council read part of this, and I'd like to read the entire paragraph. Minnesota law provides that to the extent these assessments exceed any special benefit, increase in market value, the charge constitutes an unconstitutional taking without due process. By the terms within the documents pled by the property owners here, it's directly tied to under Minnesota law. There's no separate cause of action. There's not even a single sentence. And to say that the property owners would like to amend, that was not done at the district court. It's not permissible to bring these claims at this stage.
What about in the portion of their in their request for relief? They don't specifically tie it to Minnesota law there. And it talks about unconstitutional taking without due process there as well.
That's correct, Your Honor, it does. However, again, it's tied directly to that special assessment. The way that the document reads is a notice of appeal and appeal. And it's, as far as I'm familiar with, it's very similar to many types of appeals that you would see. Again, because the special benefit needs to match the assessment that's conferred on a property. Without that, it can become an unconstitutional taking. And so that language is not necessarily giving any notice to the city that a constitutional claim is going to be brought.
Well, right. I agree with you that, sorry, I agree with you that, I mean, it's not broken out separately. It's not labeled as a separate cause of action, so it may not be the most straightforward. But there are at least a couple references to an unconstitutional taking. Unconstitutional has a very separate meaning than just a taking. That word is modifying the taking portion and putting it seems to be in a completely different category. And all we're talking about is notice pleading. It doesn't have to be the most perfectly worded, but it seems to be putting the city on notice that there is there's a constitutional issue here, in addition to the fact that it's talking about due process. Why I'm struggling as to why that's not enough to put the city on notice that, you know, there is a separate issue here that needs to be addressed as well.
So a couple of things here, Your Honor. One is that even though it says unconstitutional taking and constitutional taking are pretty much the same thing as far as I understand them to be. However,
How so? Because you were trying to tie taking to Minnesota law before, but that unconstitutional seems to put it in a separate category. I mean, I would agree with you if it just talked about Minnesota law and a taking of property, that would, to me, would seem fairly vague and would seem to be a statutory claim under Minnesota law. But when we're talking about unconstitutional, that seems to put it into a separate category there.
I would disagree, Your Honor. Under Carson Lang Realty Company versus City of Windham, which is 240 Northwest 2nd, 517, Minnesota Supreme Court from 1976, if a special assessment exceeds the special benefit conferred on the property assessed, then an unconstitutional taking without just compensation has occurred. So again, they are hand in hand. There's nothing distinguishing the two from each other in that sense.
The premise there is that if you have, sorry.
Just to clarify, you're talking about an unconstitutional taking under the Minnesota Constitution or federal?
Correct. It would be under the Minnesota Constitution that I'm talking about.
Okay.
Well, can I ask you this? I mean, 429 provides a mechanism by which a property owner can contest a special assessment. Does the fact that there is a statutory provision and procedure provided to do such a contest, does that mean that that a party is not allowed to also bring constitutional claims in conjunction with that hearing? Or can they bring that as a separate action? What is your understanding of what the correct procedure would be in bringing such claims?
Yes, Your Honor. A property owner would certainly have the right, of course, to bring any claims that they feel that they can justify and argue and allege in a complaint. Similarly, if a property owner feels that a special assessment justifies a separate cause of action, they could attempt to bring that. I don't believe that would be successful.
Do they need to raise these constitutional claims before the board that does the assessment or the entity that does the assessment before bringing an appeal?
I believe that 429 doesn't require that. It requires you to file or sign a notice of objection to the appeal. It does not, the 429 doesn't specify exactly how you need to frame it, and I'm not sure that 429 would preclude a property owner from bringing a constitutional claim, but there's case law and other rules that would likely preclude such an argument, yes.
All right. You mean preclude them from bringing, I mean, do they have to bring a separate action in order to bring those claims? I'm just asking you, how does a property owner proceed here? Because counsel here is saying this is a whole separate claim, independent of the state remedy here.
And I don't think it's independent. But if a property owner wanted to, I suppose they could hypothetically add a claim for a constitutional taking or some sort of due process violation as part of their notice of appeal and appeal. I'm not sure that the statute says you can't do it that way.
Okay. Are there any cases that you can direct us to that would give us some guidance on that point?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor, where a party has tried to commingle a special assessment appeal under 429 with a constitutional claim. As I said, they are hand in hand for the most part.
Well, they're certainly related, but...
Go ahead.
They're certainly related, but that doesn't mean that... It sounds like what you're saying is just because you bring a 429 state claim, that doesn't mean you can't bring a constitutional claim under either Minnesota or federal constitution, correct?
That's correct. Okay. What we're talking about today is the claim under 429. That is not something that necessarily will prejudice the property owners here from bringing a federal claim or attempting to bring a federal claim that's separate from 429. However, again, because 429 controls special assessments and 429.081 specifically says that it is the exclusive remedy to appeal a special assessment, I feel it would be an uphill battle to bring separately.
And I'm wondering how this is going to work. So if the state decides, and our courts decide, our state courts decide, that the special assessment was appropriate, and then there's a federal claim brought at the same time for an unconstitutional taking, and I assume they're going at the same time, and maybe they reach a different result. Aren't you going to have some perverse verdicts there, or perverse results?
That's right, Your Honor. And I think that the Supreme Court decision in Williamson County Regional Planning Commission versus Hamilton Bank of Johnson City, which is 473 U.S. 172, it's from 1985, I believe that that would govern that situation. That Supreme Court decision established two criteria before a property owner can bring a federal takings claim. And under that case, the property owner has to first seek compensation through the procedures that state law has provided. And here, the property owners attempted to do so. However, they failed because they did not properly serve the city in a manner in which to acquire personal jurisdiction over the city.
Well, when you say properly serve the city, is that under the state statute or just for the federal claims? Because there are two different services.
Correct, Your Honor. So the property owners failed to serve the city to acquire personal jurisdiction over the 429 claims because they emailed the document, the pleadings, to the city instead of
right,
personally.
Right, but why isn't the service that was done at the end of January, why isn't that sufficient for the federal takings claim?
Because I don't believe there are federal takings claims in the pleadings, Your Honor.
Well, let's assume there are. Let's assume that there is sufficient pleading here of unconstitutional takings claims under the federal and state constitution. And if in that case, isn't the service at the end of January, isn't that sufficient?
If we're assuming that there are federal takings claims within the complaint, I suppose it could be considered sufficient. The personal service that occurred at the end of January, if we're taking out all the timelines and the 429 claims and not considering all that, the city would concede that that personal service was in accordance with the rules. However, again, you have to ignore everything that happened before that in order for that service to be effective.
But those are two different issues as to whether or not there's service proper for the 429 claims versus service sufficient to satisfy the requirements for the constitutional claims.
The way that you're looking at it, Your Honor, yes. However, the way that the city views it, no. The 429 claim is what's at issue here. That's what we're deciding today. That's what the district court was faced with. That's what the city received notice of. And that's what the property owners failed to acquire personal jurisdiction over the city for.
On the 429 claims.
Right.
But there is a separate issue on the on the constitutional claims.
I disagree, Your Honor. I don't think that there are separate constitutional claims here. But I understand
right.
that that's
you,
your...
You, yeah, you disagree that there is one sufficiently pleaded in it. I understand that. But if we assume that they're sufficient, then that is a separate issue. Which leads me to the second question I want to ask you in terms of the preemption claim. So we contrast, there's at least some reference to unconstitutional takings. But there's also this allegation that, or argument that of preemption. I wonder if you could address that briefly.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. And Felder versus Casey was spoken about earlier this morning with counsel here. And I would just say that that is a preemption case. We don't have a preemption case here preemption occurs under three different situations. One is which there's an express provision in a federal law preempting a state law. The other is where the federal statute occupies the entire regulatory field, and then the final is where the federal conflicts directly with state law. There's nothing here, and counsel has provided no evidence of a federal law that directly conflicts, occupies an entire regulatory field, or has an express provision that prevents 429 from applying to this particular situation. Again, a special assessment appeal is purely a creature of statute. There's no common law right to it. It's therefore the procedures that are outlined in 429 must be strictly complied with and followed for a property owner to perfect their appeal. This is not at all a preemption case. There is no federal law that requires or allows property owners to email their appeals. There's actually no cause of action for a special assessment appeal under federal law. So
does failure to comply with the service requirements in 429.081 preclude bringing of a federal constitutional claim? Is there a conflict in that way?
As I said before, I think that the decision on the 429 claim here today does not necessarily prejudice the property owners from bringing a separate federal claim if they are able to, successfully allege such a claim. So I see I'm out of time. I'd ask that the court affirm the district court's ruling. Thank you.
Your Honor, that last question you just asked is, I think, the heart of this case. That is to say, we do have a right to bring a separate freestanding federal takings claim in state court, separate from a 429 action. And if the...
Can I just ask you, can you cite some case law for that?
No, and here's the reason. The reason that this never comes up is that most, in this case, we have this anomalous situation where I used email rather than personal service. And so we have this jurisdictional question that we're talking about. In most of the traditional appeals of special assessments, they're under 429 or they're under the city charters, if that's controlling. And the result is that the state courts have always had they've never had this procedural distinction before them. And the result is that they have always found consistently that a taking without special benefit is a violation of both the state constitution as well as the federal constitution. And so now in this case, I am saying, because of this procedural problem that I have, I'm saying ignore all of that 429 stuff. In an actual fact, I still have a freestanding federal cause of action properly noticed in my complaint.
But let's look at that. You pointed to paragraph 4 as to argue that you properly noticed your federal constitutional claim, and you just a minute ago said that there could be a taking under this either the state constitution or the federal constitution. In paragraph 4, you only reference Minnesota law. You say Minnesota law provides that to the extent these assessments exceed any special benefit increase in market value, the charge constitutes an unconstitutional taking without due process. So when I read that, to the extent you're alleging a constitutional claim, I read it as a Minnesota constitutional claim under the Minnesota Constitution because it referenced Minnesota law.
I respectfully disagree. I believe this is clearly a constitutional claim. I believe that under Minnesota law, if you violate the federal constitution, you are violating Minnesota law. And that's the basis upon which that phrase, introductory phrase, was used there.
Well, and I'm just trying to think. I'm trying to think of why people who have special assessments against them don't always bring a federal constitutional takings claim. And I just thought of a reason why there might be a problem. If you had not pled that's assuming you, for purposes of our discussion, that you did adequately plead the federal takings. But assuming you had not pled that, and you admittedly lost your 429 claim, then as a matter of law, isn't the taking the law of the case? I mean, that isn't the law of the case at that point, is that the special assessment is presumed reasonable and that it applies?
No.
Wouldn't that be the case?
The rule of the
Wouldn't
case.
Wouldn't that be the law of the case?
The law of the case is that if there is a special, if the special benefit is lacking, it is per se a violation.
But again, let's forget about your federal claim.
Right.
The federal, that's the state claim. If you don't appeal, then the presumption is that the assessment is appropriate.
You're right.
So that's the law of the case. Then how could you bring a federal claim if the law of the case is that the assessment was appropriate?
No.
So I don't know how. I mean, I don't know how you get there.
Well, I get there
because you've got the law of the case. The law of the case is the assessment is presumed to be reasonable, and it is and it stands here because there was no appeal.
You are correct. Under Minnesota law, it is presumed correct until a couple things happen, until the plaintiff brings in competent testimony that there is no special benefit. Then the presumption falls away and is nothing. And then the two parties have their appraisals and they do this. But the point simply is that under Minnesota law, that presumption is just a presumption under Minnesota law. Under federal law, there is no such requirement and there is no such presumption. The federal constitution says that if you take property without just compensation, it is a violation of due process under the 14th Amendment. And that's what's happening here. And the city and Felder makes very clear that the federal right cannot be trammeled or inhibited by these extra little presumptions, for instance, in this case, or these extra little notice of claim requirements in this case that there
but,
are.
But I think that's a separate issue. I think if I understand Judge Hooten's question is not going to the presumption, but if we were to affirm the city or the district court in terms of the special assessment, doesn't that become the law of the case? And that is different than a presumption. That becomes law and becomes binding if all the requirements are met, the same party, same issue, et cetera, et cetera.
McCullough 2 shows exactly that. This court, confronted with the same situation, that is to say, were the 429 niceties observed, this court decided that in McCullough 2, the 429 niceties were not observed, and we are dismissing the plaintiff's case under 429 rules. However, this court sent the matter back to the district court to determine the significance of the plaintiff's federal constitutional claim. And that's exactly what we're asking for here, is that you can dismiss me under 429 for my state court claim. But it still stands there, and it needs to be resolved on its merits. It cannot be ignored. And that you have concurrent jurisdiction to do that. And in McCullough 2, that's exactly what you did. You sent it back to the trial judge for resolution. In fact, that case then settled, so we don't have the benefit of having it come back. But these two cases have been going up together at the same time. And in answer, Judge Hooten, to your basic question of why hasn't anybody done this before, the point is that only arises in these situations where you've got a procedural screw-up. And then it causes the lawyer to say...
So there's a benefit to having a procedural screw-up, is it?
Well, it helps us all focus on some of these issues more tightly than we would otherwise.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, get a decision out, and we appreciate your arguments this morning. Thank you.